And good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. I'm Melody Cederstrom. And my co-host today is Dave Allen. And we're going to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. It is Wednesday, October 16th, 2019. Good afternoon, Dave.
Yes, it is, Melody. Happy hump day.
Happy update to you, too, and I do believe Wendy Wilson is joining us today. I see she's not connected with us yet, so perhaps it is Wednesday, and so maybe we can get her in here in just a few minutes. But first, we do have the market report to talk about today, and it's been a really – markets have just been very, very strange. And gold today, let me go ahead and get to those gold prices. Gold was up $9 this morning. We're still at $14.90, but not a bad day for gold. Silver struggled a little bit off the high, but only down a penny at $17.46. Platinum was up $2 at $890, and palladium just keeps roaring, up $34 at $17.69. And I would have to think that palladium rhodium is really performing based on some sort of an agreement, you know, probably both Brexit and with the, you know, some sort of a trade agreement, since those are, you know, really true industrial metals. And but again, you know, Russia controls a large part of that palladium. And so you never know what kind of, you know, what play is going on there. And so, you know, palladium is just, has always just been a, you know, usually when you see palladium go like it does, it's, you know, someone is cornering the market, someone is playing the market, and eventually it just quickly drops. And let's see. I just got a text from Todd saying that Wendy might not be here. So we'll just take it over, and you might just have to wait till the second segment to listen to Wendy. But anyway, we're going to go on. Palladium was, again, up $34 at $1,769. The USDX today was down 0.29 at 98. Crude oil was up 50 cents at 53.31. Stock market today, you know, down 21. 27,003. The NASDAQ was down 24 at 8,124. The S&P was down 6 at 2,989. You know, there's still discussions that there's going to be a Brexit get-together, and they're running out of time. They got a two-week schedule. And we'll talk about that later. But 10-year yield, 1.75%. Japan was up 1.20%. Everything else was fairly quiet in the rest of the markets. Bitcoin dropped below 8,000 today. That was down 2.5%. But so there's a few things that were going on in the market today. And, you know, the outlook, economic outlook, is getting a little more dour. For the third quarter, with growth now projecting at just 1.5%, Dave.
Yeah, how about that?
Yeah, now this is according to both a projection by CNBC and Moody's Analytics. Weak consumer spending inventory data caused some economists responding to their this rapid update tracker to lower their collective GDP projections by 0.1 percentage points to the lowest level yet for the third quarter. We had core retail sales that was announced today. It fell by 0.3% in September. This is the first drop since February, and a sign that the resilience of the consumer could be waning. At the same time, though, business inventories were flat for August, and of course, they also missed expectations of 0.3% growth. Now, Dave, this disappointing data caused Goldman Sachs, they're cutting its estimate by 0.3% to 1.7%. And so, again, everything is being dropped on these estimates going forward and for the third quarter.
Yeah, I mean, the Atlanta Fed's GDP Now measure puts growth at 1.8. You got HFE, it's at the top of the estimate at 2. Oxford Economics on the low end at 1.2. And the New York Fed's nowcast is at 2%, but that hasn't been updated in close to a week. So if the rapid update projection holds and is correct, it'll mark only the second time since quarter two of 2016 that GDP fell below 2%. Now, according to the New York Fed, chances of a recession over the next 12 months, you know, are at between 35 and 40%, near its highest level since April 2008, as the U.S. was in the early midst of the financial crisis. You know, the indicator that the New York Fed uses looks solely at the relationship between the 3-month and 10-year Treasury yields. When the 3-year rises above the 10, it's been a reliable recession predictor over the past 50 years. We've talked a lot about that in the last 6 months. Other measures, though, aren't quite as dire. Oil prices, for example, historically another key yardstick for recession probabilities, have essentially stayed in check. And no recession, Melody, going back to the early 1980s, has started without a price jump of at least 90%.
You know, this morning I was flipping through the station's financial news programs and so forth, and I was clicked on CNBC, and it was coming up to the end of their little segment with this. I'm not even sure who these analysts were and so forth, but they were talking about oil, and they were talking about, you know, the recession, and when you have something from left field and pushes the price of oil, and you have this global recession, what is there to purchase? What is available to investors? And the gal, you can see the puzzled look on this gal's face. She didn't know how to answer it. But what she mumbled was treasuries and gold. And, you know, she really didn't know what to say, because that's what everybody goes to. I mean, everybody, first they'll say treasuries, you know, because you move a lot of money quick, and I mean, that's supposed to be a guaranteed safety. But that's going to be the, you know, that you know, that's what the one of the bubbles is, you know, that will be corrected, you know, in this next global recession that we do face. But it was just funny, she could barely mumble out gold. And then of course the main Joe Kernan came and, you know, changed it all around. Well, what I'm really asking you, they just hate gold, but they all know where everyone is going to go. They just don't want you there now. You know, and it was. It's just like, you know.
Yeah, these mainstreamers have certainly have their way with protecting their market investments.
Oh, absolutely, and so do financial planners. And I get it; I understand it. You know, but you know, nobody wants you to have gold. So. Home built, not until the price starts to rise, and then they can, you know, get patted on the back for telling everybody to buy gold. But anyway, because so many people out there, Dave, really don't understand money, and they don't understand what really, or maybe they do, but it's just like anything else. You have to go along with mainstream, and because it's too hard to, you know, swim upstream, I guess. But home builder sentiment is up. Of course, mortgage apps are down. Sentiment jumped 3 points last month to 71. Now, this is the highest since February 2018. And, of course, that was due mainly because of optimism that was caused by, you know, the falling mortgage rates over this past year. Mortgage interest rates did rise, though, last week. Yet that still didn't throw any type of cold water on this mini refinance boom that's been going on for the past month. Applications for loans to purchase a home, however, came in weaker. Consequently, total mortgage application volume was essentially flat, rising just 0.5% for the week, according to the Mortgage Bankers Association. And the average mortgage rate for the 30-year fixed rate loans increased to 3.92%, from 3.90. So, despite this slight rate increase, applications to refinance a home loan rose 4% from the previous week. And
Remember this time last year, the average rate on that 30-year fixed was about 1.18%, 1.2% higher, 5.1%. Mortgage apps to purchase a home, that same report showed that fell 4% for the week. Still up 12% from a year ago, interestingly. The refinance share of mortgage activity increased to 62.2% of total applications from 60.4% the week before. Mortgage rates reportedly are continuing to move slightly higher this week, signaling to some that the recent lows in bond yields are over for now. We'll see about that. Matt Graham, who's the COO at Mortgage News Daily, said geopolitical and trade-related headlines remain capable of causing plenty of intraday volatility in the coming days and weeks. That's certainly how we see it as well, ladies and gentlemen.
You know, I hate saying this, Dave, every time we read, a comment from various people. It's not that we support these people. I think they're part of the problem of our situation that we're in. I'm not a fan of any banker. They create our problems. They come out smelling like a rose while, everybody else, loses their assets. But, when they come out and make statements, you kind of have to look out and look and think of why they're coming out and making these statements. And it's a consensus. You should pay attention. And the person I'm speaking of is Jamie Dimon. I'm absolutely no fan of Jamie Dimon. I mean, none whatsoever. That's another program for me to talk about Jamie. However, he's in charge, but his forecast. So what he also says is important. It makes news. And his forecasts are beginning to grow increasingly vague. He says yesterday, after yesterday's morning barrage of bank earnings that sent JPM shares higher, the bank reported record quarterly revenue, but Dimon said that the geopolitical tensions are not encouraging consumers and businesses. He says it does look like geopolitics, particularly around China and trade, are reducing business confidence and, of course, business capital expenditure. Now, Dave, would that have anything to do with this repo market? For the lack of confidence?
Oh, sure. There could certainly be a short-term relationship there. No doubt about that. Don't know if that was on his mind when he made that particular statement, but certainly we wouldn't be surprised, if that's what was on their mind.
We know last week during the trade negotiations last week in Washington, the Chinese delegation reportedly offered to drop the restrictions prohibiting foreign financial firms from owning a controlling stake in mainland financial service companies. However, Beijing wants Washington to drop all trade war tariffs before it moves forward with any of it. So Beijing has promised to spend $500 billion a year on U.S. agricultural products in exchange. J.P. Morgan said it has agreed to buy a controlling stake in China International Fund Management, a Chinese asset management firm.
Yeah.
So,
curious to see if that ends up being allowed.
Yeah. Well, probably will be.
Circling back to yesterday's earnings report, Dimon said that while he expects a recession to arrive at some point during the, quote, not too distant future, the exact timing remains a mystery. Now, you're not the only one. Almost exactly a month ago, he said his gut told him that a recession is not imminent. I mean, we certainly beg to differ with that. There are just a humongous amount of signs just you know, flashing that it's really just around the corner. Now, he followed up and said, of course there's a recession ahead, but whether it's soon, we don't know. He says housing and wages look strong. Now, wages certainly don't. It looks like we're still growing, but we'll see. And even that statement, anything, you know, higher than 0% is growth, sure, but compared to 4%, 3.5%, even 3%, you know, we're not growing in that sense. Now, for what it's worth, the New York Fed's proprietary gauge is, you know, presently indicating, as I mentioned, a 35% to 40% chance of recession breaking out during the upcoming 12 months. And again, historically, that number is high and getting closer to where it was before the recessions of 2008, 1990, 1970, and 1960. And the 2000 dot-com bust was closer to, I believe, 60%. So now remember, too, the phase one deal between China and the U.S. is yet to be written, even as Donald Trump and Vice President Liu He insisted last Friday that it had been finalized as a handshake agreement. So I believe there's a lot more to come on that particular story in the coming days and weeks.
You know, we talk about, you know, these people talk about wages rising. It's like, yeah, people have gotten raises, but they get less hours. And that's the problem. You know, there was a report out by Target. I don't know who actually did the reporting on it, who wrote this story. But, you know, Target, if everybody remembers, they were one after the tax cuts. It says, oh, well, now we can raise the minimum wage and everything like that now that, things are good. And I think, you know, this is the Examiner, I believe. But now what's happening is people's hours are being cut. So, you know, when they used to be okay making what the wage they had, it hurts them more. Even though they're getting paid more, it hurts them to have their hours cut, because you could be working enough hours also to get your health care by the company, but your hours are cut. Now, all of a sudden, you don't qualify for the health care that the company provides. So you're penalized twice, getting less hours, and so you get the dollar raise. And, of course, this was a story about how the folks at Target who benefited from those increased minimum wages, but they're not really benefiting. We're heading into a break right now, ladies and gentlemen. Please stay tuned. We'll be right back right after these few short messages. You're listening to Financial Survival. I'm Melody Suderstrom, and I'm here with Dave Allen.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it: to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cedarstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cedarstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk CommonSenseTalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for a weekly newsletter and blog, and you can listen to this program live. Just go to the 4 o'clock Eastern time, Monday through Friday. Click on the bar at the top at 4 o'clock Eastern, and voila, magic, we're there. And of course, we also have the archives, and we've got some great prices, and I've been working on a couple of specials for you. Dave, I can't believe it's October 16th. We just started the month.
Yeah, I just remember we started summer.
Yes, this is true. Hey, Merry Christmas.
There we go. And a Happy New Year to you, too.
Well, thank you. Oh, boy. Let's see. Well, Wendy Wilson, we're trying to get a hold of her and make sure everything's okay. But we do have this northeaster that is coming up the coast. She might have been affected by that. Heavy rains and winds. We're getting it here in the eastern shore of Maryland, although we're just on the fringes of it. So if you were in the center of it, perhaps it was a little more severe. Maybe there was some power lost and so forth. But so as soon as we know something, we'll let you know also. But so Wendy Wilson, make sure you support her. Give her a call. And Chicago Fed Prez thinks no further rate cuts are necessary. Well, you know, Charles Evans, president of the Chicago Fed, he agreed that the two interest rate cuts this year, he agreed with the two interest rate cuts this year, but thinks that's probably enough for now. As markets anticipate another reduction later this month, Evans, who is a voting member of the FOMC, said in a speech this morning that policy is probably appropriate given an economy that is softening but still in good shape. All told, the growth outlook is good, and we have policy accommodation in place to support rising inflation. They're all just such full of you-know-what. this is the humorous section of the program when we talk about their little speeches.
It is, to give them credit, it is ironic. But, you know, what, rising inflation from 1.6 to 1.7? That's a sheer joke. Oh, my gosh.
I know it.
Again, you got to appreciate the humor.
I know it. That's so. It's just like when we talk about this and what they say, and they can say it with such a straight face and such a. And that's what creates confidence, ladies and gentlemen. And that's what this country needs, is confidence. That's what our finance system needs, is confidence. That's what it's all based on, confidence. But Evans also conceded that there is an argument for more accommodation as a buffer against downside risks, such as a slowing global economy and the U.S.-China trade war. Like a slowing global economy would not affect us. That's what cracks me up, you know. The only thing that's going to bother our economy is the U.S.-China trade. Not that the rest of the global economies are slowing. It's just, anyway.
Dave. Well, you know, he said his own assessment is pretty much in line with the consensus on the FOMC that emerged from the September meeting. As we know, the committee agreed to another rate cut, 25 basis points, but its consensus forecast it was reported in the subsequent minutes, was for no additional moves this year or next, and one reduction each in 2021 and 2022. I don't believe there's any way there won't be at least one more this year, whether or not you agree with that. Now, officials who oppose further loosening in policy express concern over financial imbalances that have occurred, such as inflated prices and risk assets like stocks and like what occurred in the repo markets last month. Nevin said, "We need to acknowledge that there is a limit to what monetary policy alone can accomplish." Well, you know, that's probably true in the context of reality, and especially as we talked about the other day with, you know, debt rising way out of hand. You know, it's going to be harder and harder for Congress, you know, to latch on to any major fiscal policy that's going to help when this recession does come full blown. Now, traders are heavily anticipating another rate cut at the next FOMC meeting on October 29th and 30th. The CME's Fed Watch puts the chances of a rate cut 25 basis points at 88%. That's as of this morning. So that when it's that high, Melody, the Fed usually does not disappoint. Obviously, there's no guarantee, but it's looking more and more likely we're going to see another 25 basis points.
You know, they keep talking about how our economy is still strolling along, and it just defies logic that if your economy is strolling all along, why cut rates? It's just, you know.
Yeah, especially when you're going to need it.
Especially when you're going to need it. Sooner. And I think, and that's what they were also talking about this morning when I was, you know, changing channels, is, you know, what can they do? You know, negative rates, just like everybody else is doing, except we're just, you know, we shouldn't be in negative rates. But it's coming. And then they're just softening the blow. And, you know, the 29th and the 30th is a great timing because that's the same time as Brexit.
Oof.
So I think they'll have a Brexit deal. I think that's a little different than when May was in there. And because it got real quiet over there, didn't it?
Yeah, and frankly, I believe they're a little more desperate for a deal.
Yeah,
both sides, really. EU and the UK. I mean, UK certainly more than all of the Eurozone, but a no-deal Brexit isn't going to be good for anybody, in my humble opinion. And so I agree with you. I do believe there will be some...
Yeah.
Some deal, whether it's, you know, like a phase one thing like we're seeing with U.S.-China, or if it's going to be something that substantively deals with the Northern Ireland border issue, remains to be seen.
But something will get done, and you have these two things going up, so you could probably see markets, you know, kind of maintaining, but that would be my prediction. They're going to make these announcements together. So, GM and UAW, they reached a tentative deal. And I'll tell you what, if they don't, if they wouldn't make a cut and Brexit didn't go through, I wouldn't want to be holding any paper at that time. But anyway, GM and UAW reached a tentative agreement. GM union leaders tentative deal, new labor contract that could end. It's been a month-long strike. Details of the proposed deal, of course, were not immediately available. Nothing ever is. However, the union's roughly 48,000 members with GM are expected to receive raises and bonuses as part of the accord. Based on previous proposals, the company will also invest at least $7 billion to $7.7 billion in its manufacturing operations and add thousands of new hourly union jobs during the next 4 years. Sounds great. The company also previously agreed to maintain its health insurance, which is considered gold standard, which requires employees to cover roughly 3% of the total cost. The number one priority of the national negotiation team had been to secure a strong and fair contract that our members deserve. That came from the UAW Vice President Terry Ditz.
Yeah, not surprising. The UAW's national negotiating team is recommending that union members accept the deal. Ditz said he's refraining from discussing details until local union leaders can meet in Detroit on Thursday, tomorrow, to review the proposed tentative agreement. GM confirmed the proposed deal and said details of the accord will be provided at the appropriate time. The deal's about reportedly 2 weeks away from being finalized by rank-and-file union members, who have a vote by secret ballot. It still needs approval from local union leaders before that. They'll vote on that at their private meeting again tomorrow. Local leaders will also decide whether workers will remain on picket lines or return to work during the voting process. I'm sure GM hopes for the latter.
Well, I'm sure, and if the UAW leaders approve the proposed contract, GM's unionized workforce, they're going to have to vote on it. This new contract, if it is ratified by members, will be used as a template by the union for negotiations with both Ford and Fiat Chrysler. About 48,000 members, of course, we know have been picketing, and the work stoppage has rippled through the automaker's North American operations. It caused thousands of additional layoffs. Bank of America analysts estimate GM has lost more than $2 billion due to the strike. And it also contributed to substantial declines in their stock during these past 4 weeks. The shares fell by double digits earlier this month, and now they're down by about 4% since the last trading day before the workers started picketing. So, you know, we'll see. But the devil's in the details, ladies and gentlemen. And, pretty much the workers got everything they wanted.
Yeah, this health plan is, as you mentioned, the gold standard. That was a huge one. That was initially, we were reading the keystone of the company's proposals to increase... either decrease benefits or increase workers' out-of-pocket share of premiums at 3%. Some might even, I guess the Rolls-Royce standard would probably be no premium payments. So we'll agree to stick with what they're calling the gold standard. Right, Melody?
Absolutely. But, I think what they really did was to invest money into creating new jobs. See, that I find fascinating. I mean, sure, workers always want wages, increases, bonuses, health care, and so forth. I'm not sure how often workers want to stipulate in the agreement that they need to invest money to create jobs here in the United States. So that's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, on the one hand, if you're a cynic, you can say, well, it's just more money in the union's pockets, with the dues that those additional, 1, 2, 3 plus thousand new employees will result in. However, in terms of the long-term viability of workers, and certainly perception among current workers, to the extent the company is reinvesting in the country.
Yes.
Gotta give, workers and their families, I think, added reassurance that, they're going to be there for the long term.
A new study shows that high-earning Americans are renting instead of buying homes. In 2019, about 19% of U.S. households with six-figure incomes rented their homes, and that's up from about 12% in 2006. So, according to a Wall Street Journal analyst that found the increases equates to about 3.4 million new renters who would have likely been homeowners about a generation ago. I can't think of anyone who we've rented to recently who didn't make $100,000, and this is from Bruce McNillage. He owns 148 rental homes around the Southeast, and he's actually building 118 more. As more people forego homeownership, there's a risk that America's already wide wealth gap gets worse. Home price appreciation has historically been the way most middle-class Americans accumulated wealth. Now it's debt. which is not wealth, but when real estate values rose steadily in the decades after World War II, you had the middle-class wealth surge, and this, according to a new analysis of consumer survey data from the University of Michigan, and that was dating back to the late 1940s.
Well, this is a big change. I mean, 19% compared to 12%, that's an increase of more than 50% in less than 20 years. Now, Moritz, I don't know how you pronounce his name, Schurlach, he's a professor of econ at the University of Bonn in Germany. He's one of the authors of the study. He said roughly half of housing wealth is owned by the middle class today. He said it isn't unusual for high earners to rent in pricey coastal cities like New York and San Francisco, where sky-high real estate prices have long limited home ownership. We only have to realize that go to your newsstand on Sunday, take out the real estate section, and just look at housing prices in New York City and the suburbs. Amazingly out of whack compared to the rest of the country. However, you know, these markets still account for less than 20% of the new six-figure renters, at least according to the journal's analysis. Now, to accommodate well-off renters, developers have raced to erect luxury apartment buildings around city centers. Even in the small town I live in, we have two completed large apartment complexes, upper scale, they appear from the outside, and one, a new one, under construction. Investors, meanwhile, have bought hundreds of thousands of suburban houses to turn into rentals and are increasingly building single-family homes specifically aimed at these well-heeled tenants. You know, the average of the tenants' two largest single-family landlords now earns $100,000 a year. Boy, we live in interesting times.
We do, and I want to finish up with a comment when we come back from break. Please stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be right back.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today. today, complete with two Black Berkey Elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival. I'm Melody Cederstrom. And I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen. And heading into the break, we were talking about homeownership and the decline in the middle class. They're renting. More and more people are beginning to rent than purchase homes in that middle class. And during the break, I was talking to Dave, and with this gig economy that we have, I wonder how many of these people actually qualify anymore for a mortgage. We do continue to see subprime mortgages beginning to, be on the rise. So that might be part of a way to compensate for people moving away from home ownership. But it isn't fun owning a home anymore. I mean, it's the cost. I mean, a lot of these communities have HOAs, property taxes. And I think property taxes is a big one. Because you never do own your home. The government owns it. You have, the cost of bringing in people to, to repair your home, the quality, the costs. I mean, to find decent contractors. And I know a lot of listeners are probably great contractors, but you can't be all over the country. And so it's very difficult to find good ones. And that's price-effective. So, yeah, Dave, I can see people why they're moving. It's just too much of a headache anymore to own a home. And you go into these states with taxes. Look at New York. Look how many people, in the higher class, the higher valued homes. And plus, the home values are just not reachable anymore compared to the salaries that people are making. And again, that all comes back to your dollar buying less and less. It takes more of those dollars, and that's why we see the prices so out of whack with wages. So the purchasing power continues to decline. So
it's good news for landlords, this new trend. I mean, this study shows that these high earners tend to stay put. Ones with children particularly, you don't want to move to another school district. And also that also lowers, the lower turnover rate. Also, typically, will reduce maintenance costs for the landlords. They don't have to repaint, apartments every year. Maybe they only do it every 5, 6, 7. So it's a very interesting trend.
Yeah, very much so. We talk a lot about retail stores. We talk a lot about so many of them being closed, the competition of online purchasing, consumer purchasing online, and U.S. retail store closures in 2020. Well, guess what? They are at risk to be just as bad as 2019 or even worse. Now, this was a report by Credit Suisse. Domestic closures are trending to all-time record highs, led by the soft lines, also known as apparel or textiles. There have been 7,600 U.S. store closures announced in 2019 to date. This is the highest number of closures ever at this point in the year. Around 75% of those stores are soft lines. There are multiple reasons for this trend. Of course, we talk about those trends. Soft lines spreading or spending has deteriorated as the retailers struggle to lap a tax reform-driven step up in the 2018 discretionary spending. In addition, there have been powerful changes in purchasing habits in this category.
Yeah, I mean, the result of that is, you know, added pressure to already challenged traffic trends at what they call overstored brick and mortar retailers. You know, with those trends in play, the analysts say they believe it'd be increasingly tough for the softline retailers to justify keeping underperforming stores open, and wouldn't be surprised to see another large-scale round of closures in early 2020. I mean, some mall-based names, you know, most at risk for larger-scale closures are, you know, Macy's, Penny's, Gap, and L Brands, Victoria's Secret. You know, and there are a lot more of them, too. You know, with each sort of monthly new report, updated surveys that we're seeing, I mean, the numbers are just astounding. And, you know, while that certainly has an impact on the economy, think of the impact it has on those people who are losing their jobs left and right.
Well, you know, Turkey's been, and we follow up on this just to keep you folks informed. Today you had the president of Turkey call for Kurdish fighters battling his troops in northeastern Syria to lay down their weapons, withdraw from the borders this very night. Resisting Western pressure to halt the operation, Erdogan also requested international support for his country's battle against the Kurdish fighters. What was that, Dave?
Jeez.
I know.
International support. Yeah, from Russia and Iran and Assad.
Yeah, I know. Speaking to Turkish Parliament, Erdogan said Turkey would not stop fighting until it has established a safe zone. I know. It's as funny as our Federal Reserve presidents, isn't it, when they come out and make statements? But I guess they were trying to, Vice President Mike Pence and Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, I guess they were planning to travel to Turkey, but I heard that he wasn't going to meet with them or talk with them. Erdogan was only going to talk to President Trump. I don't know if that's changed since we've been on the air.
We'll find out. I mean, that's certainly what he said. I could see both sides of this. I mean, to the extent Erdogan, you know, has an agenda that he wants to accomplish here, not meeting with Pence and Pompeo would probably be in his self-interest, because, you know, they're going to bring some high-level pressure. Now, he's also been getting this pressure, not face-to-face, but reportedly phone calls and electronic messages from leaders in Europe saying, you got to stand down. But, you know, again, to the extent he can stay at arm's length, he, Erdogan, you know, and have his ministers meet with our officials, you know, that gives him an out from, you know, any sort of quick decisions. Well, you know, we got to get back to the president and see what he wants. And they make counteroffers, and we say, well, we got to get back to our president and see what he wants. So this is not over by any stretch, Melody. And in the meantime, boy, some of the pictures we're seeing on television in real time are just astounding.
Well, you know, I'm not so sure. This doesn't seem like it's very important. I mean, why would it be important that cell phone service was restored in Kashmir, Dave?
Oh, just ask any business.
Yeah.
There, any individual who hasn't been in touch with his or her family, that members of which don't live there. You know, shoppers, and especially, you know, folks who might have some kind of health emergency.
Health issues.
Yeah, they can't call their doctors, can't call the ambulance for an ambulance. And hopefully you have service there with a company like AT&T or Verizon, whoever offers service over there. And, you know, you're not relying on prepaid phones. They still don't work. Yeah. Only mobile subscribers.
Well, it just goes to show you how dependent we are on cell and how they can be controlled. I still have a hard line in my home, in addition to my cell phone. I know a lot of people eliminated their hardline phones and only rely on cell service. They've led us to believe that, you know, everybody, there was that big push that everybody had to have a cell phone. Everybody. Government gave away free cell phones to everybody. And, you know, it's, I didn't care for that. I think everybody should have a hardline phone. And, I mean, hardline phones were a lot cheaper. Much, much cheaper.
For sure.
I think, you know, I think. But this is, so it is important, but also it's establishing the relation, the problem that they had with Pakistan, I believe. You know, that would mean that you had the region cell service was shut off last month before the Hindu nationalist government of India, Modi, announced that the revocation of a constitutional provision that gave partial autonomy to Kashmir. So isn't this more about India and Pakistan also?
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah. You know, what we talked about just a minute ago, I think, are just some of the... Well, whether they're intended or not, some of the important residual effects of this blackout. But clearly, I think the main purpose was, you know, Modi, you know, not wanting to give the Kashmiris an opportunity to sort of, you know, it makes it a lot harder to organize. You know, against what they're what India has done, and you know, certainly I think could increase troubles between the two countries. Modi's no dummy, but he is increasingly becoming more autocratic, and that's a problem for these people caught in the middle here in the Kashmir region.
Well, you know, there's big headlines today that it's time that Facebook should be broken up. And now, as Facebook continues to look for funding, so maybe they're having a more difficult time funding for their digital currency, which it was its answer to Bitcoin. Now we have China. Is trying to introduce its own digital currency. And it's one that could allow the government and the central bank to see what people are spending their money on. Far from the libertarian ideals of cryptocurrencies, which allows users to buy and sell without leaving a digital trail, China's e-cash system will be tightly regulated. It would give the People's Bank of China greater insight into transactions throughout the country. In late September, Central Bank Governor Ying Gang said China's new currency may be associated with existing electronic payment systems, such as the popular WeChat and Alipay phone apps, which are widespread and allow yuan transactions via bank accounts, Dave.
Yeah, now while we're reading, there's no specific timetable for implementation of this new currency. Chinese media are putting their money on a November 11th launch to coincide with Singles Day. That's a massive annual online sales event in China. Now, it's likely to be more akin to electronic currency stored on a physical medium than a cryptocurrency such as Bitcoin, which is based on a computer network. One thing is certain, according to one analyst, we will adhere to centralized management, that is China, in controlling that digital currency, which I haven't seen a name for yet. That's the polar opposite of the philosophy behind cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin. Now, China, interestingly, was once a stronghold of Bitcoin. It's easy to forget that. I mean, just 2 years ago, the three major Chinese Bitcoin trading patterns you know, BTC China, OKCoin, and Huobi accounted for more than 98% of world trade of cryptocurrencies. But the sector was unregulated. Transactions were invisible to authorities, which obviously Beijing doesn't like. And they shut down the trading platforms in 2017. Perhaps more of us could learn from their example in this case.
Well, you know, it says they want to an observer said its purpose is to replace cash. I'm not so sure it's to replace cash, but what I understood, the citizens of China were only allowed to take out like $50,000 outside the state. And they were using Bitcoin to move money outside. And this is what China was having an issue with, because they didn't know what people were doing with their money. And they didn't like people moving their money outside of the country. And they didn't know where it was going. So I'm not so sure that if you're going to use their domestic crypto, knowing that the government is tracking you, whether you'd be interested in using it or not, I don't know. But it's not like you'd be able to go into the deep, dark web and using their crypto. I mean, kind of defeats the purpose of, you know, the dark web and the crypto. So I don't know. It's kind of interesting, but it's interesting. We're out of time. We'll be back tomorrow, ladies and gentlemen. Please stay tuned and have a great night.
And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad.